You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. How exciting was it that Free Solo won the Oscar this past weekend in the documentary category? That movie, if you haven't seen it or don't know about it, was based on the record-setting accomplishment of free climber Alex Honnold. Alex is from Sacramento. He trained and competed at Granite Arch in Rancho Cordova. So Alex came to Insight in October of 2016. We were going to have a conversation about his climbing career, and he showed up at the studio that morning with his documentary cinematographer. I looked back at some of the emails, and there's an email to us saying, "Hey, we're filming with Alex for a feature-length documentary. Could we join Alex in the studio to film a portion of it? It would be a very small crew." And that's an easy yes for me. I'm comfortable with the cameras. I don't mind them coming in while we're doing this work. So in the studio came professional climber and award-winning producer, documentarian, Jimmy Chin. Alex and I had a great conversation. Jimmy was circling and filming the whole thing, and, you know, that was that. That's just what we do every day. So fast forward to 2018, and I get a text message from my friend Bart O'Brien. He was in Yosemite for the 15th annual facelift event, and he says, "Hey, Alex Honnold is here, and last night he presented his film Free Solo, and guess what? Insight is in it. You're in it." And that's how we found out. And then more messages came in, and as it turns out, Chai Vassarelli and Jimmy Chin, who co-produced and co-directed this film, and you see Jimmy in it, in his own right, he is a legendary climber. They chose a clip from our interview, and it made the final cut. And so that's just kind of one of those wow moments. But we're really proud to have been part of such an intense and fabulous film. We want to extend our congratulations to Jimmy, to Chai, to Alex, and all of the team for winning the Oscar. This film, by the way, is winning other great awards, too, and I'm sure there are more to come. Most of all, from all of us, we want to say that we are thrilled to be part of what is a beautiful tribute to the skill, the courage, and at times the insanity of the amazing Alex Honnold. And I'm really glad in moments like that that I'm part of a group of people who just say, yes, because isn't that sometimes what changes everything in life? So let's move on to a little bit more entertainment. B Street Theater has a remarkable production opening tomorrow, March 1st. It continues through April 7th. And it is a play that picks up where Henrik Ibsen's classic play, A Doll's House, leaves off. This is A Doll's House 2. And in the studio with me is Dave Perini, director of the play. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Beth.
Glad to have you here. Tara Sissom is here, and she is in the role of Emmy Helmer, daughter of Nora, that quintessential feminist figure through history because
iconic.
Of this play.
Yeah.
Hi, Tara.
Hi.
Glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get to Dollhouse 2, let's talk about where Dollhouse 1 leaves us.
Yeah. So, and this just, I mean, it was just such a revolutionary idea for Ibsen to write a play where a female character leaves her marriage, leaves her household, and you know, at the time that he wrote it, of course, people were up in arms. This was just not, you know, so Nora is in an unhappy marriage. We don't know that at the beginning of the play of A Doll's House. We think everything's perfect. Her husband dotes on her.
It looks right.
But then, of course, the cracks start to reveal themselves. And more than just being in an unhappy marriage, what Ibsen really was always trying to explore was the idea of freedom, true independence. And so his protagonist, Nora Helmer, makes that choice at the end of A Doll's House to seek true independence, true freedom. And she leaves the house and slams the door slam that was heard around the world. People were so upset. He was threatened with legal action. He had to write a new ending where she stays, which just killed
that
him.
That became very controversial,
yes.
The new ending.
Yeah. So
I think at the time, or not so long ago, 10 years, it was the most produced play all over the world.
Sure. It still holds up. It's amazing. It was one of the first plays to use a sort of realistic dialogue. It wasn't stylized. It wasn't in verse or anything like that. So it was revolutionary for that. But that play still kind of holds up in terms of its importance and its relevance.
Tara, jump in here with mm-hmm. why the daughter's role is key and the daughter's age. What happens to time from the original to this Doll's House 2 production?
Sure. So after the door closes, my character's around 3 years old when Nora leaves. So it's been 15 years. So I'm 18. Emmy's 18, coming into her own right as a woman, has lived primarily only with her father and her, nurse. So has no real model for what a wife or a mother should be, but knows fiercely that that's something that she wants. I think she craves domesticity and the idea of being maternal and having a family because that's not something that was present in her life. So it's mysterious and it has this allure. And I think she has some idea of her mother's ideals, knowing that her mother left, knowing that she was kind of independent and a woman ahead of her time. But instead of it being inspired by that, she more or less is the opposite of that and wants something that is more traditional, which then I guess, as you can imagine, if she's coming home, can be quite a pill for Nora to accept. Emmy, I think, is very similar to most teenagers in rebelling against their parents. I don't know if Emmy in her full life will feel the same way. But, like most teenagers, it's kind of like, well, if mom or dad thinks this, then I think something else. And I think Emmy's kind of making her way as an independent woman about, 15 years later. So what's moving into more of a more modern world.
How daunting would it be for a playwright to decide, I'm going to write
so
a Doll's
audacious.
House 2?
Yeah. It's the audaciousness. And the interviews that I've read with Lucas Naith, he said he had the title in his head and it made him laugh. And he thought, my God, this is so just outrageous. But what's great about Lucas Naith, he's truly one of my favorite modern playwrights. He has the ability to take a topic, take an idea, and examine it from every angle. We did a production of his show, The Christians, that dealt with, inspired by pastors who had been removed from their churches because they all of a sudden came up with the idea that maybe there isn't a hell. And The Christians offered such a balanced look at that idea. He does the same thing with Doll's House Part 2. You take this woman who left for all of these great reasons, this idea of independence and feminism and all of that. But then you have to come back 15 years later and see your daughter and see your husband who hasn't moved on. And what was the effect? And is marriage this terrible thing or is it a good thing? So he what's great about the play is people's allegiances change throughout the hour and a half that they're sitting there.
Tara, do you think it's necessary to know or have seen the original?
No, not at all. And here's something that my theater teacher will cringe when they hear this from college. I've never even read Doll's House Part 1, and
what?
I've never seen a production of it. It's one of those things that I've been in theater since I was 6 years old, and I've narrowly escaped. It's just never been on my radar. You absolutely don't. We filmed a promo for it, and I was like, Dave, you have to catch me up on what Doll's House Part 1 was about, because all you need to know is that she's left and now she's back.
You didn't go back to it as a research process?
I didn't, because my character is not
never
present.
Even seen. Emmy is a character that exists off stage in
so
the
maybe
original.
It's better that you
I
didn't
thought
go
it would
back.
Be better so that I could build. I mean, moving forward, yeah, I'm not avoiding it. I'll welcome a read of it.
Yeah, it's just interesting.
But
I
wanted to be. Yeah, I didn't want any of that information to cloud my judgment on my character, because that's what childhood is. You know, your parents may talk about things that happened when you were quite young, but it's not relevant to your real life story. You know, I was in the playroom with my brothers and sisters, not dealing with a marriage falling apart. So that's kind of where I start.
What about Nora 15 years later? Tell me about Nora in your production.
Well, Nora is played by our company member, Melinda Perrette. What's great about this show, it's not only it's funny and smart and it's blistering, but the performances are incredible. And this will embarrass Tara, but these actors are explosive. This show is amazing. So Nora has come back. She has found her voice. She knows who she is 100%. She needs something. And the whole hour and a half is spent with her trying to decide how she's going to get it. and navigate her way through a household that is in a lot of ways stayed the same, but also changed and morphed. And so it's just it's a real tour de force for Melinda to play this part of Nora, because she's on stage the entire time, has every other line. And just it's electric. The performances are electric. Last night's preview, the audience were so audible in each given moment, where when you can get an audience of 250 people gasping or going, ooh, or laughing or applauding just spontaneously, then we know we've done our job.
We are talking about A Doll's House Part 2. It opens tomorrow night at B Street Theater in Midtown Sacramento at the Sophia. The play is being discussed right now by Dave Perini, who's the director, and Tara Sissom is Nora's daughter, Emmy, in the show. It will continue through April 7th. This production is a hit nationwide. Yeah. People may have had many different takes on what exactly Nora did or was going to do at the end of the classic. Yeah. Here he launched into his vision and exploration of what might have happened. This could have just been smashed by the critics and by audiences everywhere, and that is not happening.
It's not the case. It was nominated for a number of awards, 8 Tony Awards, and pretty much every review I've read has said the same thing. Like, it was an audacious idea, but this is just a testament to the talent of Lucas Nath as a playwright, that he did his research too. From what I understood, he went and asked scholars and friends who knew scholars to say what could have Nora done back then. What would have happened if a woman had left her house and had to go out on her own? And a lot of the options were pretty bleak, and he decided not to go that route, that Nora is actually a very successful writer. She's a writer of women's issues, and that's where she comes back in a place of pretty high status and success, and that made for a much richer story, I think, as a result, yeah.
Tara, what happens with clothing and language? This original play was written centuries ago. Mm-hmm. So what do you do now?
You know, it's interesting, and what I love about Nath as well, I was in our production of The Christians, and he's such a specific writer. And if you don't get his words perfectly, you somehow are muddying the meaning of it. He's so specific, but it is a really modern take. The phrasing is modern. The words that we use are modern. So we might be stylized and look like we are in an appropriate time period, but the language and the body language is a little anachronistic. And I think stylistically, that's what he wants, Nath and Dave as well, is for us to not feel like we're looking back into the past, but we are actually pulling the past forward into more modern times and taking these issues maybe with different hairdos and different dress.
Are you dressing like you're in the late 1800s?
Yes, you are. Full okay. Corsets, bustles, all kinds of stuff.
I know I'm putting you a bit on the spot, but mm-hmm. Can you give me an example with the language, some sentence, something where we're hearing...
There's a moment when Nora and Torvald fall into some of their old patterns of arguing. And it's for me, this is what I'm noticing watching the audiences, is she refers to him. She says that he doesn't get angry. He's stuffed up. And she goes, "You're constipated." And the audience kind of goes, because it's the first time we've heard, you know, one of just a very modern vernacular used. And it's fun. And then the audience realizes, oh, this isn't a stuffy period play. This is a very modern take on, you know, just using these characters that have already been established to talk about these great ideas. Mm. So it's really fun.
All right. And of course, the issues apply today, too. As a young woman, Tara, where are you connecting personally with this story?
Absolutely. For me, as a female feminist audience member looking at this play, looking inside, you know, the world that Nora envisioned is somewhat here in our 2019 lives. But I do love and respect the play's ability to show all sides of an issue. And Nath gives this character the ability to say, if freedom is the goal, then this is what I choose. And you can't tell me what I want. You know, what you want might be different, and I'm glad that you're empowering people, but I still might want, for very valid reasons, to have a family, to be a mother. And what's nice in our world today is for women, there are both options.
Well, I know that a woman is the character evolving, but I always heard the discussion of freedom and personal choice open for all people, mm-hmm. even, you know, at the coming of age, mm-hmm. whether you're a teenager or a person looking at the twilight of your life, mm-hmm. that idea to be free and be who you are in your own skin in some good way in this world was what he was working on.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, and it's kind of a spoiler, but she has a wonderful speech at the end where she talks about how she found her voice and how for years she had to sit there and sort of eliminate the other voices in her head, the voice of her husband, the voice of her father, the voice of the pastor, until she was certain that the only voice she heard in her head was her own. And I think, my God, you know, I'm a 49-year-old man. I don't know that I don't hear the voice of my parents still. The voice of, you know, right. all those authority figures, like how to get to that place of true freedom is pretty admirable.
You're yeah. younger. Do you think you hear that voice a little easier, Tara?
I think I've been tried to be in touch with that voice in my head my whole life. Yeah. But no, I think everyone, we are shaped by our environments and by the people around us. I'm certainly a product of my parents and my environment, but I'm also proud of that. And I feel like my voice is somehow interwoven with those things that I was you know, raised to believe or hold true. Fortunately for me, it's the arts and being true to oneself. So it's a little bit easier. But in the world that Emmy and Nora were growing up in, there were one or two options for women. And I'm very lucky that there are a multitude of options for me.
Tara Sissom is in the role of Emmy, Nora's daughter, in this production of A Doll's House Part 2, which opens at B Street Theater March 1st. It continues through April 7th. Dave Perini is the director of A Doll's House Part 2. And your assignment is to, Tara, take the run of the show with version 2, and then go back and watch the original.
That is so true. Thank you. That is so true.
And then report what you
I know,
think,
right?
Okay?
Thank you.
We've got a
special show tomorrow night, or excuse me, Saturday night, 9 o'clock. It's a $9 ticket. So it's the cheapest theater ticket in town. We'd love for everybody to come check it out. 9 o'clock on Saturday, $9 tickets.
All right. We'll post a link to B Street Theater, and good luck with this. I think it's going to be fantastic for all audiences.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
More at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.